Okay, so I'm going to talk about some work I did in collaboration with David Giotto, Aaron Simons, David Thompson, and Xi Yin in a series of papers last fall. Now, black holes have been a never-ending source of fun and inspiration for a century. And the last several years, they seem to keep coming up with new surprises. And the last several years have been no exception, with a number of new connections to unexpected areas of string theory and mathematics emerging. And I talked about this last, this is my transparency from Strings 2004 in Paris. Do I get a pointer? This is the transparency I used, Strings 2004 in Paris, and it indeed looks very much like transparency that that Atish just showed us. And there have been a lot of work in the last year in all these different connections, and I've been thinking about all of them. This talk refers to last year. But I thought I would talk about the one that seems to have received the least attention, which kind of got left out of, has so far been kind of left out of the mix. So we've been discussing black holes and topological strings and two-dimensional conformal field theories, attraction mechanism, and so on. And all of this should be related to the one holdout in the family of ABS-CFT correspondences, namely the relationship between two-dimensional anti-de Sitter space and one-dimensional conformal field theory. One might think that the dimension being so low, this would have been the first one that we would understood. But in fact, it seems to be quite confusing for a number of reasons, and we still don't understand it. But I think some of these recent developments have shed some light on this and might enable us to pull this concept back in, where I think it will have a central place in relating all these ideas. So what's the basic idea that I'm going to pursue? The basic idea is that a black hole is composed of brains, which in the context of compactification to four dimensions, they can wrap various cycles, and they look like point-like quantum mechanical objects. And these objects have some interactions, and then one wants to show and they can be described quantum mechanically, these interactions. And one wants to show that the bound state degeneracy of this interacting, an n would be the number of particles, the bound state degeneracy would be the entropy of the black hole. Now, the puzzle in this is where the conformal comes in. It's easy to write down D-brain quantum mechanics, but why is it conformal? Well, we expect that somehow it's going to be conformal because the near horizon region of an extremal black hole has this ADS2 isometry, which by duality should relate to some conformal invariance of the quantum mechanics, but we don't understand how that works. So what am I going to do today? Well, today I'm going to describe, though what I'm doing can be generalized, what I'm going to describe a specific example. I'm going to consider probes which carry D0 charge in the attractor geometry associated with a D0 D4 black hole. And we're going to see that actually a single probe is described by a superconformally invariant quantum mechanics, and we'll see why that happens. And then we're going to see that actually we're going to look at the bound state problem there, and it turns out to be quite subtle. And it turns out that there's some very interesting bound states which are superconformally invariant, but from the asymptotic point of view, they look like little zero brains which are popping in and out of the black hole horizon. And then I'll show that in the D0, D4 case, that if one, there are in fact very many of these, they populate some Landau levels which tile the black hole horizon, and we'll find that their degeneracy to leading order exactly matches the expected area law. And this kind of program, a lot of people, I'm not going to go through the references, but a lot of people have worked on this from different kinds of pieces of this, including a number of my students at some earlier stage. And so I just wrote their names there. So let me start by just reviewing a D0, D4 Calabi-Yau black hole. And unfortunately, my transparencies are slightly bigger than the screen here, so I have to, there's always one equation that gets lost on the bottom there. Okay. So let's talk, let me describe or review for you, and this picture here is going to be very important to understand, what a D0, D4 black hole looks like. So first of all, I'm thinking of some Calabi-Yau compactification, where in general I can have charges from wrapped 0 brains, 2 brains, 4 brains, or 6 brains, but I'm, to make my life simpler, I'm going to only have D0 brains and D4 brains, which I'm going to take to, I'm going to label the wrapping numbers by PA, where the value of PA is the number of times that the D4 brain wraps around the eighth cycle. And so, of course, in the actual black hole solution, there are no explicit brains, but it carries the charges that would be associated with such brains. And here's the Penrose diagram for the black hole geometry. And we have a singularity at the origin, and then we have an asymptotic region, which I've labeled R equals infinity here, and then we have a horizon, and if we take the maximal analytic extension of this solution, the whole structure repeats itself infinitely many times. And so we have an infinite series of universes and an infinite series of horizons. Then we have we can talk about a Hamiltonian which generates time translations which goes along these green lines here. Now where is the near horizon region? The near horizon region is what I've outlined in the blue lines here, and if we blow that up and draw a picture of it over here, it looks like this. So this near horizon region is the R and the T plane make up an ADS2, and then we've got the S2 of the horizon, and then of course we've got on top of that the overall three complex dimensional Calabi-Yau manifold, and this will be an attractor geometry, which means that the moduli of the Calabi-Yau and the size of the S2 and the ADS2 are determined by the charges, and in particular the radius of this ADS2 and of the S2 in the Einstein frame is proportional to the gravifoton charge, which we can write as the square root of d times Q0, Q0 being the D0 brain charge, and d being this triple product of the four brain charges contracted with the intersection matrix of the Calabi-Yau. So d is essentially the number of times that this four cycle has, the number of triple self-intersection points of this four cycle inside the Calabi-Yau. Okay, so now if we look, wait, if we look over here, if we look in the near horizon region, the Hamiltonian, the generator of time, is what we often call Poincaré time in ABS2. And time, if we started time equals minus infinity down here, we would get to time equals plus infinity up here. On the other hand, there's another time that we like to think about in ABS2, namely the global time. And I'll call the generator of that, following convention, I'll call the generator of that global time, which just zooms up and down ABS2, L0, as opposed to this Hamiltonian, which has trajectories which start and return to the boundary of ABS2. Now, notice that if we have something moving in constant, in a constant position in global time, it's crossing these dashed lines, which are the relics of the horizon out here. So if we find something sitting in the center of ABS2, from the point of view of the asymptotic observer, it jumps out of the horizon and then jumps back in and then reappears in the next universe and in the previous universe and so on. So things which are static in ABS2 in global time are not static in the full asymptotically flat black hole solution. Okay, so before looking at quantum probe bound states, so what we want to do is study the problem of various probes, the bound states of probes in these geometries, and compare them, see if they can account for the black hole entropy. And but first, we're just looking, before looking for quantum supersymmetric states, we look for classical supersymmetric configurations. So the first thing is exactly what you would expect, this trajectory. So if we just have a simple D0 brain, this is a D0, D4 black hole, there's no force between a D0 brain by the BPS condition. There's no force between the D0 brain and the D0, 4 black hole, so it can remain stationary and supersymmetric at any finite position from the black hole horizon, this being the black hole horizon. So from the point of view of the global ABS2, that looks like an accelerated trajectory like this. You see, we're keeping the distance from the horizon constant. But what if we consider some other kind of probe, like a D6 brain? Well, if we take a D6 brain very far from a D0, D4 black hole, it doesn't interact with any of the electromagnetic fields produced by the, it doesn't have any static interactions with the field produced by the D0, D4 black hole, but there's an ordinary gravity interaction, and it will actually attract. And in the D brain picture, we expect that it will fall in and form a bound state, which will preserve supersymmetry, but a different supersymmetry than the one that we started out with. However, it turns out that if you look in the near horizon region, in fact, in the near horizon region, this D6 brain has a supersymmetric trajectory, that is, one that preserves half of the near horizon supersymmetry. So the near horizon geometry has this static supersymmetric configuration for a D6 probe, even though its charge is not aligned with the charges that are supporting this ABS2 geometry. Similarly, a D2 has another supersymmetric trajectory, which is at a different location. And I'm going to be particularly interested in something which right now sounds a little bit peculiar, which is I can consider a very funny kind of object carrying D0 charge. I can consider a D2 brain with one unit of world volume flux which wraps the horizon. So a D2 brain which wraps the horizon carries no charge as measured by infinity, as measured at infinity. But if you put a unit of world volume flux on it, if you put n units of world volume flux on it, that will give n units of the zero brain charge as measured at infinity. These things have a big mass because they wrap the horizon, so they feel an attractive force. And they also have a stable supersymmetric trajectory. And in fact, generically, any kind of probe charge with a charge vector in any direction has a supersymmetric trajectory whose position depends on essentially the phase of its central charge. Now, when we first found this, we thought this was very interesting, and then we came across this paper by Deneff, which had been written several years earlier, but we shamefully hadn't read, in which he talked about D0, in particular he talked about D0 V4 black holes, which had bound states of D6 brain at some finite radius, that radius depending on the moduli. And just hearing that, I presumed that what we had discovered here was some near horizon limit of the more general more general configurations discovered by Deneff. But in fact, that turns out not to be the case. It turns out that the Deneff solutions, first of all, can never be pushed into the near horizon region, no matter how you scale his solutions. And secondly, they preserve different sets of supersymmetries. The Deneff solutions preserve the asymptotic supersymmetries, and these preserve only some of the near horizon supersymmetries, but none of the asymptotic supersymmetries. So there's some interesting relation there, but they're clearly related in some way, and that's something we're trying to understand. Now, what time did I start? Okay, well, I was going to actually write the formula for the position as a function of the charge, but I'll just skip that. Okay, so now let's go on to the quantum mechanics story. So now I want to describe the quantum mechanics of a D2 brain which wraps the horizon and carries some units of D0 charge. So here's the Calabi-Yau 3, here's the 2-sphere, which is the horizon, and here's the near horizon ADS2. And I want to consider D2 brains which wrap the horizon and then just sit at some fixed position, that supersymmetric trajectory in ADS2, and I want to construct the Hamiltonian quantum mechanics. So first of all, the first thing is that these D2 brains, if you think about them as point-like objects in ADS2 and in the Calabi-Yau, they couple to a magnetic field in the Calabi-Yau, because D2 brains are dual to D4 brains, and this D4, they couple to this four-form flux, which is a four-form, and the four brains making up the background are producing a four-form flux which has two legs on the S2 and then a magnetic field PA omega A, where omega A is the basis of harmonic two-forms on the Calabi-Yau 3. There's a two-form in the Calabi-Yau and a two-form on S2, but you just project that onto that S2 and integrate out this volume form, and effectively you've got a point-like object which couples to a magnetic field. So if we look at the slow motion quantum mechanics, so now we want to construct the slow motion quantum mechanics of this wrapped D2 brain. And what's its tension? Well, its tension carries a contribution from its area, which is essentially Q squared, or the radius of this sphere squared. And then it picks up a little extra term from the flux. But at the order we're working, we can just neglect that and say that its tension is given by the radius of the sphere. Okay, and then here we've got the metric in these funny coordinates. Zeta is 1 over r squared, and I've chosen these funny coordinates because that's the coordinates in which the quantum mechanics look simple. And here's the quantum mechanics problem. So here I've got a momentum just for the radial motion. I've got a potential, which basically comes from the fact that this well, it comes from the fact that this RAFT2 has a mass. And then I've got a kinetic term for the motion on the interior of the Clavial, which of course is shifted by this magnetic field. And this Lagrangian turns out to be superconformal Lagrangian. In other words, there's an operator D, operators D and K, which I can write here quite explicitly, which fill out an SL2R superconformal algebra. And in fact, conformal algebra, and also in our paper you can find in gory detail all the fermionic corrections to this and all the supercharges and so on. Why is it superconformal? Well, it's superconformal because I can think of this because there's an SL2R symmetry of ADS2, and that isometry obviously acts on the states of this probe, so we have to have an action of these ADS2 SL2R symmetry on the quantum mechanics of the particle moving in this background. So basically, it's inherited from the SL2R of ADS2. Okay. So now we want to count. So now we have the quantum mechanics of the probe, and now we want to count the bound states of the probe to the black hole. But now we have a problem because the potential in this quantum mechanics vanishes near the horizon, and actually in the metric seen by the probe, the horizon is an infinite distance away, so we get an infrared continuum of light states, highly redshifted light states, near the black hole horizon. And this is an old problem in black hole physics, which people has come up again and again for 30 years, that near the horizon you have lots of states, which would seem to contribute a huge entropy to the black hole. It's basically an infinite entropy to the black hole because of the continuum and so on. So what should we do? We can't count these because they're continuous. So now, I can't really justify this, but it's similar to things that we do in similar contexts involving ADS spaces, and seems to give an interesting answer, and certainly a well-defined answer. Instead of looking at H eigenstates, the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian time that takes you away from and back to the boundary of the near horizon region, we should look at eigenstates of L naught, things that move you up and down this global time, or things that move you up and down this chain in the near horizon region of the black hole. And of course, we know exactly what the quantum mechanics governing L naught eigenstates is. It's just we just add up these two. Well, just that's looking at how L naught fits in the superconformal algebra. We just add H to the generator K of special conformal transformations, and that thing grows near the horizon. And so now, instead of this continuous spectrum, we have this other piece which grows near the horizon, and now we have a very nice mathematically well-defined problem, and we can count superconformal primaries, which are supersymmetric states in this near-horizon region. And, of course, the minimum of this potential is the place where those stationary classical solutions sat in the previous... did I really start at 2:30? I feel cheated here. Okay, so we can count these things, and they correspond to lowest Landau levels, which tile because there's those magnetic fields, and there's a lot of them, because basically it's proportional to the cube of the D4 brain charge, And more precisely, you get some superconformal quantum mechanics, and you use some index theorem to count them. And one thing I want to point out about the answer here is that the number of bound states is independent of the charge of the zero brain charge carried the black hole. So what we're really counting here, it doesn't care about that here. So we can really think of here is that we're counting the number of bound states of these zero brains to one of these small black holes that contains only D4 charges. So now I want to ask the question, what is the degeneracy of these superconformal primaries with total D0 charge n? Now, the ones that carry D0 charge that have a big degeneracy are these ones that wrap the horizon S2. And I remind you again, the fact that they wrap the horizon S2 does not change any of the asymptotic charges measured at infinity. And we know that if we have a cluster of n D0 brains via the Myers effect, they can spread themselves out into some non-abelian solution. They can spread themselves out, wrap around the horizon, and form one of these horizon wrapped D2s with flux n. So let's take this total number of D0s, total D0 charge n, divide them into k subclusters with ni each, and charge D0 brain charge ni each, and form each of these clusters into one of these wrapped D0 brains. And then we have to decide for each of these wrapped D2 brains with flux ni, we have to decide which of the 4D bosonic and 4D fermionic bound states that are tiling the horizon we're going to pop it into. And, I don't think it would take you very long to realize that the combinatorics we're doing here is exactly the combinatorics one does in counting the number of states with L naught equals n of a 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory with 4D bosons, 4D fermions, or in other words, central charge equals 6D. And then one thereby finds that for large n, the number of such states can be estimated by the Cardy formula, and this agrees exactly with the Bekenstein Hawking entropy area law. And, the entropy of these black holes was also considered, these kind of black holes was also considered with other methods using by these authors. So there's my summary. So I'm proposing that the CFT1 dual of an ADS2 cross S2 cross Calabi-Yau 3 attractor geometry with fluxes n in the D0 charge sector and PA in the D4 charge sector is the superconformal quantum mechanics of n D0 brains in the D4 black hole attractor geometry. And I've provided some evidence for that by seeing that the bound state degeneracy agrees with the Bekenstein-Hawking area law. Thank you.